Today, I want to talk to you about communication. About communication that goes right and communication that goes wrong. About the times that you could clearly talk to somebody you care about, and everything is smooth and easy, and the two of you get together and you say, "Hey, I got a problem." "What's your problem?" "Well, I feel this way when this happens and this way." "Oh, really? I didn't know that. Well, thank you very much for telling me. I'll try to adjust my behaviors accordingly." And so the two of you, it's easy. What is it that stops people from having easy, loving communications? What gets in the way? Well, it seems more and more that I'm seeing that there are many factors, and we're learning that there are more factors than we ever imagined, are all involved in somebody's mood at any given moment. And that's our show about today. Our show is about mood. If you're in a bad mood, it's very hard for anything to go right. Very hard. If you're in a good mood, sometimes things don't go right as well. So if you're in a good mood and then you go home and you're mate says to you, "I want to talk to you about the dog." And you say, "What are you bringing me down for? I'm in such a good mood and you're such a downer." Does that mean you're in a good mood? I mean, why don't you just look at your mate and say, "Oh my God, you must be really hurting. I really care about you. I really love you." So what stops you? What gets in your way? Well, I guess if you had a real job to do, if you had something that was very important to do, if you had to come home and go out to dinner with two friends and you walk in and your wife is a drag or your husband is a drag, then your excitement about going out that night might be tainted. You know, you might say, "Hey, you know, what are you pulling me down for? Because I really just wanted to go out and have a good time." That happens to a lot of people. But if there's not something on the outside that you have to attend to, what stops you from loving? What stops you from loving your wife, your husband, your children, your parents, whoever it is? What stops the loving you? Where is the loving you? Well, could we say that neurosis, whatever that is, which by definition means living in the past, neurosis means that you are doing something today as if you were still a child, acting it out. Well, could it mean that neurosis can dominate and it takes over and you can never be happy? That's one possibility, but that's not true because we know you feel good at certain times, given certain situations. Like people feel good when they exercise, you know, at the end of a run, let's say you do a great run, and you do a run at the end of it, you're all pumped up, you feel terrific. You lift weights, you feel terrific. You have great wild sex, you feel great. You know, you eat great food and you relax, you feel terrific. You have a Thanksgiving dinner, you feel terrific. You can feel terrific one or the other way. You could either relax into feeling terrific or you could get hyped into feeling terrific. And we're going to talk about how that works. But is somebody who says, "I feel great," is that somebody who is somebody you can talk to? Is that somebody who would be a reasonable conversationalist? So let's look at that a little bit. Let me take you, I'm going to take you through one of the ideals about good feeling. Because, you know, there are people out there who feel good who are really crazy. There are people out there who is, you know, if somebody is paranoid schizophrenic sitting in the basement of their house making a bomb that they're going to plant somewhere, they could feel in perfect harmony. They feel perfect because they have their complete mental condition is working, and as it works, they have an avenue for it. They're creating a bomb. They feel good. Are they sane? Is that a sane person? Or, you know, a sane person could be somebody who dresses up and walks down the street and has everybody whistle at him or her, you know, and they get by on their beauty and they wear scanty clothing, and since everybody appreciates them, they feel terrific. Is that feeling good? Is feeling good when you get the part and you get the call back for some kind of a theatrical event and you have your entire life based on, will I get this part as a supporting dancer in this Broadway show? You know, is that what feeling good? What is feeling good? What's it really about? That's what we're going to go after today. And just to give you an example of it, I want to give you an example of a common perception of feeling good that I have a little disagreement with. And now what I want you to do is listen to this. And listen to it not as if you're listening to a happy person, but listen to it as if you were listening to a tormented person. Wow, I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got to hear. Oh, I feel nice. The sugar is fine. I feel nice. The sugar is fine. Now, you remember how many times you've heard this in your life? And it kind of lifted you because you said, oh, yeah, that's a real lift. And then there are times that you've heard this and you felt like you didn't want to hear it. Right? It was kind of an irritation to hear it. What you're listening to is an expression of a manic kind of goodness. This is that kind of, I feel good and I'm on top of the world, but this is not a happy person we're listening to. It's not a person who has that exquisite kind of wonderful feeling inside, which I call calm alertness, which is, I consider, where the solidness of a person really comes from. Now, in order to understand this, you have to understand the biochemistry of people and how they work and what works and how it does work. So feeling good, you know, you could feel good a whole bunch of different ways. That doesn't mean you're sane. And feeling depressed certainly is not sane. It's somewhere in the middle that you're searching for. And what I hope at the end of today's program you do is that you become able to do a survey of yourself before you engage people. That you could ask yourself, how am I feeling? How do I check myself out? And now that I know what I'm feeling, when I approach somebody, what are the signs that I'm not doing too well in this communication? And you could tell when things go wrong in a conversation. Did you ever have just like a small conversation? What do you feel like having for dinner? Oh, I don't know. You order. Well, I don't feel like ordering. I always order for you. Well, I don't know what to get. You order. And this starts. And it turned off with, what would you like to have for dinner? It was an invitation to share a meal together. But something was wrong in the middle there. And something was wrong and something was working. And what could those somethings be? All right, yes, we could say that ever since I told her that we can't have another baby, she's been angry with me. And you could say it's all about something to do with emotions and something to do with some event. It could say that, you know, it could be that. It could be a number of other things, you know. It could be a person has a physical ailment. What if they're living in all pain all the time, and they're always living in pain? What about an event that happens, or your hormone cycles? Men, women, there are cycles to your hormones. You know, just if any of you men ever have taken steroids and watch what happens to you on steroids, you feel terrific. But you know, you get crazy. You could, you know, beat up a taxi cab. Then there are the neurotransmitters that also could be running rampant. So you got your hormones, your neurotransmitters, and then any substance you take. Any substance, anything that you take that's a substance, you smoke a little grass to relax. You take a Valium. You take a sleeping pill at night. You take coffee in the morning. You take tea. Anything that you take to adjust your chemistry can have a side effect of adjusting. Of course, its side effect is exactly what it's planned to do, of adjusting your nervous system. Now, here's where the lesson of today comes. Your nervous system, when it gets out of whack, makes you out of whack, even though you think you feel good. How does the nervous system work? What could knock the system off? Fatigue. You know, do you ever get your bad night's sleep and you just think, well, it's only a bit, you know, I couldn't sleep last night. Fatigue can make you just irritable in the morning and unable to do what you need to do. Physical illnesses, events. You know, you get a call from somebody saying you have to move out of your apartment because we're going to build a throughway through your house. You know, things like that. Events, you lose your job, you get promoted, demoted, somebody else gets promoted. So these are the kind of things that could affect you, but I'm saying there's more than that. You have to keep track over your nervous system. And the nervous system is something that is such a thing that you are able to track. So this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'm giving you tools that will help you to understand the way you work. First, I want you to understand that there's a very small, I mean, just so you can get a picture of this. One of the things that make your nervous system work the most, believe it or not, is sodium-potassium balance. Sodium-potassium balance. There's a balance, a perfect balance between the sodium and potassium in your body. When you eat too much salt, you knock out the sodium-potassium balance and your nervous system goes out of whack. It does, and you could be called, they call it hypertension. When you eat salt, they tell you if you're hypertensive, they tell you don't eat salt because the sodium knocks off the balance between the sodium and the potassium and it leaks through the nervous system and the result of it is you become more anxious. That's just salt. Not that you shouldn't eat salt. You know, potassium, you could over-potassium and you could wind up in a different condition where you could wind up practically going to sleep. There are people who kill themselves with potassium. You know? Yeah, right. It's a way of stopping your heart. So if you think about this small thing and we say, wait a minute. Sodium, potassium, I eat salt and this is going to affect me. Now think of all the other things that affect your chemistry and don't restrict yourself, just learn how to notice yourself and here's the way we're going to do it. I want to teach you about the autonomic nervous system, which most of you know about because most of you have studied about your bodies and learned a little bit, but I'll just refresh you. The autonomic nervous system was called the autonomic nervous system because we once thought it was automatic. We thought it worked all on its own. We thought we had no willful control over it. So we called it, back in the days when we were giving things names, the autonomic nervous system. Then we learned through certain people like yogis and people who could stop their breathing and stop their hearts and change their, that people had some willful control over their nervous system. When we learned we had willful control, autonomic nervous system did no longer work as a title, but we still use it. The ANS, the autonomic nervous system. Now, what's important here is the autonomic nervous system is divided into two systems, and you have both of these working at all times. And what's important about this is if you could track this, if you could get a hold of this, you're going to live a happier, more successful, more productive life. It's learning to watch yourself. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking to you about this kind of calm alertness, which we're going to get to. Autonomic nervous system, right? The autonomic nervous system is divided into two branches. Let's call it two branches for the sake of simplicity. One is the parasympathetic nervous system, and the other is the sympathetic nervous system. Now, I am not going to get more complicated than this. Don't worry about it. Don't say, oh, no, I already forgot what he was talking about. Just three words here. Autonomic nervous system, the big branch of the nervous system, and then there's the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. The sympathetic nervous system is the part of us that does all the action. Fight, flight, you know, when you're alert, when you're getting yourself going, all of that is energetic expense, is part of the sympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic nervous system is this kind of passive system that does things like digest foods, repairs cells. It's a quiet place. It does it while you sleep. When you sleep, you get mostly parasympathetic. You get mostly autonomic nervous system. You get parasympathetic system when you're sleeping. And when you're awake, when you're out there functioning, you're mostly sympathetic nervous system. So to put it really, it's like if you were to say sympathetic nervous system, you talk about stress. Because you're putting stress. You have to use stress in the sympathetic nervous system. And when you're talking about the parasympathetic nervous system, you're talking about chill. So stressed out is sympathetic. Chilled out is parasympathetic. It would be nice to be chilled out all the time, wouldn't it? Except you couldn't drive your car. You'd fall asleep. You'd just be digesting food, but you couldn't go out and eat. Now, these two nervous systems send out nerves that will feed different organs. They both feed an organ. See, your heart can be fed by the parasympathetic or the sympathetic nervous system. So can your liver, so can your stomach. There is a balance. They have a kind of a balance between the two. You've heard of yin and yang, the female energy and the male energy, as they call it, you know, that they consider the aggressive energy male energy and the passive energy female energy. They call the yin and yang balance. The parasympathetic nervous system is whenever we perceive danger, we go into sympathetic nervous system, and we are stressful, we tense our muscles, we constrict our blood vessels, we speed up our thinking process. And then after the danger passes, parasympathetic takes over. You know, and what it does is it decreases your heartbeat, it relaxes your blood vessels, it clears away your metabolic waste products, such as adrenaline and lactic acid. This is how it should happen: action followed by relaxation. The tide of life ebbing and flowing. And someone once compared the autonomic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system is like the waves on top of the ocean, and the parasympathetic is like the depth of the ocean. This is it, and we need both. However, when you are out of balance, when something becomes disturbed and out of balance, whenever an instinctual response to any situation it happens, or it may be denied, it will take over automatically. And it will energize you and get you energized. So one of the ways that we energize ourselves is we tell ourselves, let's do something that feels good. So you get out and you drink a cup of coffee. A cup of coffee will make you feel good. Because it hypes up your energy. It puts you more on the sympathetic nervous system. But drink a cup of coffee and then drink two cups of coffee and then be driving in a road and have somebody cut you off. Right? Calm alertness goes out the window. You go screaming, you know, yelling at a person who's doing a thing. You can always tell a person who overreacts with anger has got their autonomic nervous system in full function on the parasympathetic side. On the sympathetic side. So you have to ask yourself this question. How does this all relate to you? Where is your balance today? Now, what's important about balance, and what's important about this balance in particular? Well, many years ago when I was studying neurology, we used to have a thing called the ready action potential. It's called the ready action potential, now called action potential. And this comes from the state of your nervous system. There used to be a thing, now we used to believe that homeostasis, which is known as kind of everything in balance, was the ideal state of mind. In fact, Sigmund Freud, one of his big mistakes was he believed that it would be ideal to have homeostasis, that everybody is looking to just relax and be calm. No, it's not ideal, because what the body wants is it wants you to be ready to fire. The ideal nervous condition is that all of your nerves are prepared to fire, but not they're going to fire automatically. Just if you need them, they'll be there. That's calm alertness. Calm alertness. This is what we're shooting for. Calm alertness. Did you ever look at anybody who's got a calm alertness about them? They're magnetizing. There is something about them. You look at a person who's got this solid kind of feeling about themselves, you know, where they're solid and they're calm and they're alert, like George Bush. No, like Gandhi. Right? Calm alertness. Certainly not sleepy. Certainly not parasympathetic. Certainly not sympathetic. Calm alertness. Not that you should all be Gandhi. But, you know, the idea being that there is a state of mind that is so ideal, so beautiful, that you can love more, your love can be felt, people can embrace you, that no matter how upset people get around you, you can probably handle it better if you are in your CA state, calm alertness state. Difficult to get to. I had to teach you a little bit about this sodium-potassium pump. Maybe just a tiny bit. Just a tiny bit. Action potential begins at in the membrane, you know. It's a positive-negative balance. You have either your nervous system at rest or you have your action potential. Your action potential is when it fires. Your ready action potential is what you're looking for. You want to be ready to have an action if it's necessary, but calm enough not to have it unless it's necessary. So I say that again to you. You want to be alert enough to have it happen if it's necessary, but calm enough not to have it if it's not necessary. So if you walk in your house and something strikes you, you pick up a piece of mail and the IRS is on the, says Internal Revenue Service, certified letter. Right now you have one of two choices according to the mood you're in. If you had a cup of coffee just before you got home, if you dropped a tab of acid right before you got home, if you, as many people do, if you did something funny and you're not in your right state of mind, you can open your mailbox and you could practically see the IRS agents crawling out of your mailbox arresting you, you know? But instead, if you look at it and you say, oh, what's this? If you're in your calm, alert place, you look at it and you look at it with curiosity. And you say, I hope it's not something bad. And you open it up and you see, like I had this happen to me 20 years ago. I got a registered letter from the Internal Revenue Service. We have investigated your prior 3 years of returns and you owe us, and I promise this is true, 11 cents. I swear they sent me a letter for 11 cents. I have the letter. I keep it. I want to frame it. They owe me, I owe them 11 cents. I sent them the 11 cents. I really did. I wonder what would have happened. Would they have arrested me? Would I not be here if I hadn't given them the 11 cents? Would the IRS come marching in? Well, according to what my mood is, you know, what's your mood? Oh, 11 cents, write your check. Pew, send it right out. So it's according to how you greet it, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. What effect does this have on people? Well, it's such an amazing thing when you consider the inside of the body and what's going on. If you take any chemicals, if your hormones are going, you mean, who are you at any given time? The question is, how calm are you? So now the first question is, are you anxious? Are you nervous? Now, how do you tell if you're nervous or not? Here's a good question. How do you tell if you're nervous or not? Now, I'm going to teach you about a koan, a K-O-H-N, which is a Buddhist term. It means a question that, when asked, in itself has an answer that it presents to you without you having to answer the question. It's a little complicated, but it's like, what is the sound of one hand clapping? You know, just by asking the question, you imagine one hand clapping, and you kind of get the idea of what the question's about. Well, here's a koan for you. What is being anxious? What is it? What is being nervous? Are you nervous? Why nervousness? Why don't we talk about depression? Why do we talk about nervousness? Because nervousness involves that nervous system, and the nervous system overfiring is what creates a very big thing. When your nervous system is firing and it's going wacky, when your salt kind of add to your salt, the potassium, now this is not just chemical, plus you've done your LSD and your coffee, and your mate is very hormonal, or you're hormonal, and the IRS sends you a letter, and the highway commission is going to take your apartment away. All of those happening at once. What is nervous? Nervous is this feeling like you're under attack, this feeling like you're jittery, this feeling like you can't get away from it. You feel, many of you feel it right this minute. You can feel it. It's like, and you just, it crawls all over your body. Now, why nervousness? Why not depression? Because believe it or not, all depression is a reaction to nervousness. All depression is fear of nervousness. That's refuge from nervousness. That's why when people are depressed, when you cure the depression, the first thing that happens is they get very anxious. And you have to teach them that this anxiety is like life itself. They've got to welcome it back. Anxiety, nervousness, how do you feel it? You could feel it in the form of tension, especially along your trapezius muscle and your masseter muscle. Masseter in your jaw. Does your jaw feel tight? Trapezius muscle, just figure your shoulders. Does that feel tight? And if you go from the outside in, you're looking from the outside feeling to the inside feeling. You're looking to go from a feeling of being, you want to know, am I nervous? Am I coming home nervous? Am I picking up my love nervous? Now, you know, one of the funny things about nervousness is that when you're really nervous and you have a fight, you spend a lot of energy and you get calm. So people talk about making up sex. They have sex, make up sex. They talk about making love after they have a big fight. It's an example of the anxiety kind of turning into an action potential, turning into a firing, turning into this great action. We have this terrific exchange, and you get a lot of chemicals going that make you feel good, you know, endorphins, orgasm. And all that's going on, and of course you say, oh, what a great thing. But it was that nervousness that started it. Calm, alert sex can be equally dynamic, maybe even more dynamic, maybe even greater. But calm, alert love, oh, my friends, there's nothing like it in the world. Calm, alert love, you're with a person and you're present. They're nowhere else. You're not looking at a clock. You're not wondering about emails that you got. You're just with the person you care about, and you look at them, and you swallow them in, and you feel absolutely blessed because you feel calm and safe and wonderful. Now, not many people can find that in life. But the investment is to get yourself in that condition so you could offer yourself in that way to your mate. I offer you the calm, alert me. And now, maybe that'll help you offer me the calm, alert you. Now you're talking about love. Now you're talking about love at a level that's not just the waves on the top of the ocean, but the very deepest, deepest, deepest depth. Armand DeMille with you. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music, and then we will continue.
Thank you.
That's one from Michael G. Haskins. That's Benny Carter. Benny Carter, Michael. Let's see. We're going to go all the way back in time to hear that Benny Carter tune. But Benny Carter from an album called the 345 Verve Small Group album, The Birth of the Blues. Just beautiful, huh? Yeah, isn't that pretty, Michael? Are you there, Michael? Just want to say hello. Hello.
Oh, hello, Armand. Yes,
so
beautiful
I sneak it up on you every now and then. I want to sneak something in the side because I know you're one of the few people who could appreciate it, this level of music, as I do.
It caught me right away, and I had to stop what I was doing to listen and pay very close attention.
Oh, there it is.
Thank you so much.
What's he doing? So, you know, if you think about the piece, why did I play that piece in particular? The piece in particular that I played, and I chose that one, because it's got kind of that sense to it, that calm alertness sense to it. There's a thing about blues. Blues, if you listen to it in a 4-4 tempo, you know, you could just kind of get almost, it could be really down in the dumps, right? But blues could be really alert sound. It could be an amazing sound. But hyper is another sound, like that James Brown piece I played a little earlier. That's a different sound. It's very interesting to see the kind of music you like at different times. And the different kind of music you like at different times, that which will appeal to you at a certain time will kind of tell you your mood. Like you may like opera, and you may feel like you're in the mood to hear opera. But I would say you would do that when you're more melancholic. You know, now I like opera, I mean, I like to hear opera. I'm kind of like a sometimes opera fan. But this kind of melancholic, or if you want to listen to classical music, or even some of the country western music, it could be, anything could be melancholic, deep, bluesy, kind of, that's the mood you're in. And what are you looking to do by listening to music, believe it or not, is you're trying to find a balance for your nervous system. You are trying to find a place for your nervous system to go. And it's going to listen. And by listening to something, you will actually help your nervous system find an outlet. People are always looking for an outlet of their energy. They're always, that's why they see so much. That's why you look around. That's why we're so visual. That's why you want something that's going to stimulate your eyes. That's why summer is so wonderful. There's so much to see out there, you know, in many ways. But in many ways, it kind of keeps you too externalized. So our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We are going to be taking your calls today. And I want to talk about this calm alertness. Calm alertness, the ideal state of mind, unless it's the calm alertness of a psychopath. There is a calm alertness of somebody who is just planning to do something harmful, but it's not the one I'm talking about because that one has a lot of tension to it. I've interviewed an awful lot of people who have studied meditation, yoga breathing, and all the other stuff, and they've gone through all this stuff, and they are very, very calm, but they're sleepy. Then I've seen another group of people who are very calm, but they're tense. The real thing you're looking for is calm alertness. Now, the problem with most meditation is most meditation and most the way people do it is they ask people to imagine themselves somewhere other than here. They have people leave their minds. Well, that's the problem with meditation. You see, I don't want you to leave your minds. I want you to stay here. I want you to stay present. I want you to look in my eyes and get calm. I want you to look straight ahead of you at everything on your desk and fall into the kind of calmness where you could feel everything in your body. Feel the alertness. Feel your, don't leave your body. Calm alertness is what you're practicing. Not calm sleepiness. And certainly not calm tension. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Hello.
Well,
yes.
Hi. My name is John. I work for the Horticultural Society of New York, and I was listening. I was driving in my car.
John, the Horticultural Society of New York?
Yeah. And I was driving in my car, and I was listening to what you were saying, and I realized it's just so true, because I just mentioned one thing to you that corroborates that, is that I know that it's not just the music that you listen to in which your nervous system is seeking an outlet for some kind of balance, but even the activity that you do during the day. I do a lot of gardening with people, kids and stuff that have been in trouble, people from out of Rikers Island, and all these kind of people that, you know, they can really have to, they have to find an outlet for their energy. They have tons of energy, but they're kind of like obsolete for one reason or another because kids in our culture don't really have much to do during the day. And, you know, people that have been in jail have a really hard time finding a job. So we put them into these gardening situations. And it is a case, like you said, of the person seeking a certain kind of outlet at that time.
Except yeah, and it's kind of a beautiful thing, especially for children. Because for young...
Yes. Oh, definitely. We always work with children all the time. Yeah. Children really... And actually, we do find that there's plenty of room for working with music in the garden. Because not only like, you know, like all the masters, of course, that make many flower music and garden music.
So is there... John, let me ask you something. Is there a volunteer group of people at the Horticultural Society who do this with these different people? Or is it just the organization that does it?
It's the organization that kind of does the organizing, but we work with a lot of volunteers. However, sometimes when we're training people that are trying to make, try to help people through like a difficult period of their life, sometimes we find that, you know, it's hard to sustain that without money, so we want to pay them a stipend, so we look for contracts and stuff, you know.
I understand. Where are you guys?
Heavily on volunteers, yeah.
Where are you guys located nowadays?
37th Street. We had a move from out of town.
You had to move from uptown. Do you know where you were uptown?
We were at 58th Street.
And do you know where that is? Do you know that was in the very same building where I sit right now?
Yeah. We were there for like 25 years. But,
I remember you guys. I remember you guys well. You're such a graceful organization. I'm really sorry that you moved.
Well, we're on 7th Street now. No, we're still around.
I know, but you used to be. I used to see you every morning. I used to walk past the shop every morning, right?
I was going to ask you if that was you. No, I had the feeling. When
that
I
is me. And what about that wonderful, who do they call the orchid lady? What's her name?
I know exactly who you mean.
Well, say hello for me.
Okay, I will.
Say hello for me, John. Well, thank you for calling in. But thanks for sharing that with us. It's very, very good. Thank you. 212-209-2900, Horticultural Society. Good organization. I learned, what did I learn? I learned Ikebana. I learned, I saw this, the art of simplicity of flower arrangement. It's just a gorgeous thing. You know, and there's another good thing for you. Look up Ikebana, Ikebana, and just look at this Japanese art form, which is just using like a single flower with some piece of material that's not alive, and you use a single flower and you combine the two of them in some artful way. You could use many more flowers, but the single flower form of Ikebana is kind of special. And you could see how the simplicity of the art form is just perfect for the calm, beautiful, excited self. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Michael, calling from Queens.
Hello, Michael, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good.
I listen to your show on a daily basis when I'm at work. I have time to turn it on and tune in for it. I'm very glad that I caught your show today because I recently have been doing a lot of physical activity. I'm 47 years old, and I couldn't figure out why I felt so energized while I was moving around. But when I finished, I felt so drained and so tired and so hard to stay awake and so relaxed. And I thought it was the activity, and it wasn't. What I've been doing is been drinking Gatorade to replenish the electrolytes in my body. And you just said potassium calms you.
Yep.
I'm having the hardest time staying awake in the last 4 days because I've been drinking this Gatorade to replenish my body. And I feel like I'm in a trance all the time.
Yeah, I hear. Well, there's two things going on here that I think might be helpful to you, Michael. Number one, you have been, even though I think what you're doing is a wonderful thing, but you have a history of depression. You've been depressed most of your life.
I wouldn't say depressed. I would say kind of like melancholy.
Well, that's what I call that. So you've been melancholic all your life, and I could hear that in your voice. Now, what happens when you step out of melancholy and you energize the nervous system, you have this potential for this anxiety. You know, it's really there. And it's really there as a potential. And when the electrolytes go out, you can get very, very nervous. So you did a very smart thing. You said, let me balance my electrolytes. Now, I know there are other drinks that don't have the kind of sugar and high potassium level that Gatorade has that wouldn't swing you all the way back to this potential of yours to kind of slip into a cave.
I'm not even drained. I'm not tired. That's the thing. I'm up. I'm moving around. I'm resting better than I've been resting. But I drank Gatorade last night, the night before, and sometime last week while I was doing some work around the house. And afterwards, I was so drained, I could barely keep my eyes open even after. I just woke up this morning at 6 o'clock this morning. By 9:30, I was dozing.
Well, you sound like, I tell you, Mike, you sound like you're making a great change in your life and you're trying to find the way to make the change happen the best. And you're doing the best way possible, which is observing yourself.
Tell me something also.
Sure.
I have a friend of mine who was giving me some multivitamins that she got from the doctor who has a website. He's trying to promote this what do you call it, custom vitamin system.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember his name, but he has a website. And he has a series of them in a package, and he swears by the omega-3. My friend gave me some of those multivitamins, but I found that taking those multivitamins did the very same thing this potassium does. It made me drained all the time. When I woke up in the morning, I was waking up with headaches because of it, and I thought maybe there was an overabundance of something that I was getting, or it wasn't giving me enough of something else, because that was the same feeling that I had then that I'm having now.
So I'm suspecting another thing you may be reacting to is the sugar, and I'll tell you why, the sugar of the Gatorade. And the reason why I say that is, a lot of the, when a person sells a general vitamin that they're trying to get people to take, one of the ways you do it, I'm going to back up for a minute.
I know where you're going with this, okay,
but go ahead. Yeah, I'm sure you don't know where I'm going with it, because I'm not sure yet, but I have an idea. If you buy cat food and you have a cat, some cat food smells worse than other cat food, and some of it is so stinky you don't want to have it around your house. But the reason they make it stinky is because the cats like it. The cats go after it because it smells, and they smell it all over the house, and therefore they always go and eat it. What a lot of vitamin preparers do is they throw stimulants into the vitamins.
That's what I was going to say.
You knew I was going there, right?
That's what I thought you were going with that.
They put the stimulants in it, which should make the average person feel good. But if you combine that with what you're doing, which is stimulating yourself by doing this level of exercise, it's probably beyond your level. And you know how to find your own balance.
So in other words, taking those vitamins is doing me any good because I'm already...
Not you in particular. It might be good for somebody else. But most of those that I see that are packaged, that are on the web that they're trying to sell as a miracle cure, they have some little extra stimulant in it, so that, like a little extra vitamin B or something, so that you'll keep going back to it.
And I did notice one. I was taking it, she said, take two packets a day. I was taking one a day because I didn't think I needed the vitamins, because I eat a very balanced and healthy diet. I don't eat a lot of junk.
I hear. So you really don't need vitamins at all.
So I made the mistake one day of taking one in the morning and one in the evening. I felt so terrible after I took that second packet.
Michael, let me ask you one more question. What about love? You're working so hard on yourself. Is there anybody who holds your head at night?
I had somebody like that at one time, but I'm having a difficult time with people when it comes to that, because I don't put restrictions on people. I don't put expectations on them. I just let them be what they are, and a lot of people want to hold me to their expectations, and when I don't allow that to happen...
Sure, because you're a private kind of guy, and that you don't resist, and you don't put up your limitations, and so people come in, and they become invasive, and then you sense it, and then you just want to get rid of them because you want to be back where you are.
Well, not even get rid of them. They start taking liberties for things like a young lady that I met. When we first met, she sounded like a very, very pleasant, very, very intelligent person. Right about the third or fourth month, I started noticing that she was becoming verbally abusive and very, very moody. And it was like she was trying to find the button that made me work. And I tried to explain to her, everybody doesn't have those buttons. You can't entice me or incite me to something. You can't make me angry. My emotions come from me.
There it goes. Okay, so let me say something to you, Michael. Michael, did you ever have a dog?
Yes.
Have you had one recently?
About 6 months ago, I was watching a dog for someone, and the dog was a terror because they spoiled him, and he was out of control, and I eventually had to give him to the ASPCA, but it wasn't a planned thing.
Yeah, because you need something. You need to make contact with something, I tell you, because the way you sound in the world, you sound like you're alone, except for me. You always have me. Thank you for listening to the show. You need to have a contact with something. I don't care what it is. You know, but you need to have a relationship with something that's an okay relationship for you, one that makes you feel good. Let it start off with a plant, or let it start...
I do. I have two children. One is high school age, and one is ending high school, off ready to go to college in a year.
Yeah, nobody around you immediately, though.
No, because I have a lot of things I'm trying to do for myself. I've invested so much of myself in other people's endeavors and helping other people for so long.
Now you're taking care of yourself.
I'm now starting to get into... following the things that I want to do, like I want to return to school, I want to start a business. I'm getting my life back together because I know when my children are old enough to go off to school and do what they're doing.
Okay, Michael. Well, I thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for your help.
I will. I'll speak again.
Yes, for sure. 212-209-2900. Yes, there's all these things you have to watch. I mean, you're kind of looking around, and you're trying to say... What else do I have to be careful for? What else is new? How do I... But check on your inside, my friends. This is it. Even now as you sit here, look at your nervous level. Am I nervous? Am I not nervous? When you're talking to someone you care about, if you feel your anxiety growing, like if they're talking and you suddenly feel yourself looking somewhere else, ask yourself, say to them, you know, oh, I'm sorry, I'm losing my attention. Something's happening to me at the moment. Now, you know, if somebody loves you and you report to them, I feel nervous, I feel anxious, and they hear you say it, someone will be able to embrace you. Instead of personalizing it, you know, they may say, well, what about me is making you nervous? But, you know, if you really could report, you know, I feel a little nervous. I don't know if I could sit down and talk to you about this right now. And all you have to do is give them a promise of a future date when you'll have the discussion. Could we have this discussion tomorrow at noon? Can we talk about this tomorrow at noon? So instead of just reacting, instead of letting the tension build in you and letting watching yourself become distracted and then watching yourself get crazy. Now, how many of you have ever been in a fight over something like a toothpaste cap or who cleans up the house or responsibilities around the house? And you're in the middle of a fight and you're yelling at somebody and screaming at them and you're saying to yourself, what am I doing? At the same time as you're doing it, but you can't relent. You can't stop. That's what most people go through. What leads you to that point is not noticing that you are missing your anxious calm and that you are nervous going in. You're nervous going in. It is about the nervous level. And by nervous, I mean your nerves are firing. It doesn't have to be psychological nervousness. It doesn't have to be you're nervous because. Forget the because. Once those nerves are firing, once your body is going in sympathetic overload, it's called, once it is firing on all carburetors, what happens is the body tells the brain, we're in danger. So you could be feeling perfectly fine, and then you get this nervous kind of feeling inside you. And let's say you get it from chemical or something, you know, drank coffee, something. And now your body says, we're in danger. And your mind says, where is the danger? The very first thing the brain does when the body feels anxious is it looks to spot the danger. And the very first thing you think about or see will become the focus. So you say, you don't notice that you're nervous, and then all of a sudden you feel agity, and then all of a sudden you feel agity, and then somebody comes along and they're driving a car and they cut you off. And you feel nervous, and you say, there's the reason it's that driver, and you yell at the driver. And by yelling at the driver, you expend a big amount of energy, it kind of pours out of your body, and your nerves go back into place. So you have this expenditure that happens with explosions. But the trouble is people think that they are right for their explosions. Express your anger, you know, that's not right. I mean, how many times do people blow up and then they feel good after they blow up at somebody else? It's just expending energy that comes out of nervousness. So I say to you, my friends, learn about yourself. Learn as much as you can about yourself, about what's going on inside you, because if you do, you're going to be a, you're going to have much more able to get control over your life. You know what I mean? Much more control over what's going on around you. And you don't have to just be at the mercy of people. So this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We want to thank Benny Carter for being with us today, because Benny Carter gave us some beautiful music. And I will be back with you. Here's a little more from Michael. I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. If you want to call my office, it's 212-757-4488. We'll be getting, I want you to honor all of those pledges that you made to WBAI during the marathon. Thank you for all of that. And you could also send me an email, Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. The Positive Mind is one word. Back with you on Tuesday at 1 o'clock, my friends. Thank you.